from a nutrition perspective, if you think back to the decades that we all grew up in, so I'm speaking to women that are in like their 30s, 40s, and 50s, we had some really bad nutrition advice
Yeah,
for
like
women in
no
that.
fat for a while.
Oh my
No
gosh.
fat.
Right. Hormonally made from
Margarine,
fat.
margarine over butter. Remember that phase?
Yes. There were a lot of weird things. And I think we grew up with just some pretty disordered relationships to food and body. And similar to what you'd mentioned with workouts and pushing through, we got really good at either ignoring or suppressing hunger cues too, because we were following rules that were outside of how we actually felt.
Welcome to the Find Your Strong podcast. I'm Jennifer Van Barneveld Pei, president of Strong Fitness Magazine, founder of Team Strong Girls, and fitness coach turned fitness publisher. Each week, I'm going to give you a thought or an interview of how to build stronger bodies, stronger minds, and stronger relationships. Getting to where I am now has been nothing short of a journey of the ultimate highs and the deepest of lows. I've had my fair share of setbacks, near bankruptcy, an eating disorder, and multiple miscarriages. You name it, I lost my way time and time again. But through it all, I uncovered my purpose, which gave me the perseverance to find my strong and stay the course. I've spent more than 15 years coaching women, and I know that fitness is a vessel to help you feel strong, confident, and empowered in your body and your life. If you're looking for inspiration and motivation, you've come to the right place. You are not going to want to miss this. Welcome to the show, Kaylee. I am so excited to sit down with you today. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited too.
You talk my language, and that is nutrition, specifically for women's health. And today we're going to talk about hormones and how to optimize our nutrition for healthy and happy hormones. So this is going to be fun. How did you initially start in nutrition for women, Kaylee?
Yeah, this was never my intent. I got into the dietetic space thinking I would work in sports nutrition. I grew up an athlete. I was a marathon runner for a little season of my life and was really interested in nutrition for performance. And so that's what started me down that path. But while I was going through all the schooling, I was having a lot of hormone health issues, and I was meticulously applying all of the nutrition education I was getting to myself, and I wasn't feeling any better. And so I ended all of the schooling with this credential and feeling like a total imposter, like completely unequipped to help people because I was doing all the quote unquote right things and feeling worse. And so I spent a lot of my free time in my like baby dietitian years learning about the menstrual cycle and learning about nutrition and our sex hormones and how little research is actually done on women until very recently. So I had this like complete pivot in a lot of my nutrition and health beliefs, and eventually found my way back to feeling really good. And when I did, I realized how many other women in my life were hungry for that kind of info. So pivoted away from sports nutrition and moved into the women's health space, and have loved every minute of being here.
Awesome. I don't know if you want, I don't know if you feel comfortable getting into this, but what were some of your issues that you were dealing with? Do you mind me asking? Like, you're
Not
saying
at all.
hormonal issues?
Sure. Yeah. I'm an open book. So
okay.
None of this is off limits. So I went on birth control really, really young. So like pretty much at the start of ever getting a period, like maybe within two or three cycles, I was on birth control because I was having such miserable periods. I was like missing days of school. It was horrible. And went to my doctor and was like, hey, this will solve that issue. And I was like, amazing, sign me up. And so I started taking it. And pretty much from that point on, so like high school into my undergrad years, I kept switching types of birth control because I just wasn't feeling quite like myself. There was some weight gain that came with it, a lot of low energy and brain fog, and just like a loss of like a certain zest for life and energy. And throughout those years, I was really being told that it wasn't related to that and that it was something else. That progressed into some pretty significant anxiety when I moved into grad school. And once again, was told, you know, well, we can give you some drugs for anxiety. It's not related at all to that. And I was pretty dissatisfied with those answers. I had this deep suspicion that it was tied to the fact that I wasn't making my own hormones. So I came off birth control, and then it took me probably a good year or two to get my progesterone production back, to get normal cycles back. And it was a pretty bumpy road in there where I still just really didn't feel like me, had a lot of anxiety, had a lot of fatigue and changes to body composition. But on the other end of that, felt so much better and now get to help women doing that, which is really, really fun.
I feel like a lot of women can relate. I can totally relate to that story. Same thing, you know, horrible periods, missing school, go to the doctor, and the first thing they prescribe you is the birth control pill.
Yep.
And then it doesn't make you feel great mentally, and you try different kinds, and you're kind of going down that, you know, vicious cycle and not really knowing what's wrong with you. I feel like that was great that you already kind of were questioning it back then, because a lot of us ignore those symptoms until we get a little older, right? Now, in your practice now, what are some of your common signs and symptoms that you're seeing in your practice when people come in to see you with their hormones?
Yeah. So we've got, you know, we really serve women in the like 20 to mid 40s age range predominantly. And so some of the biggest reasons somebody might come to see us is maybe they have really irregular, absent or symptomatic cycles. And, you know, they understand that your menstrual cycle is a vital sign. And they're like, I want to dig into this. And, you know, taking something like birth control or something that might mask an underlying symptom isn't sufficient. We want to see what's going on and see what we can do diet and lifestyle wise. We serve a lot of infertility clients as well. So whether they've had recurrent miscarriage or maybe they've gone down the path of fertility treatments and it hasn't been successful. And once again, they just want to do a deep dive into what might have been missed and how we could support them better from a nutrition and lifestyle perspective. And then kind of the third biggest area somebody might come to see us for is kind of metabolic health issues. A lot of hypothyroidism, whether it's diagnosed or just subclinical, just that like low energy, weight gain, kind of lost that spark for life kind of symptom.
I saw this post on your Instagram saying that we're a generation deprived of progesterone. And this really stuck out to me because I've been open about this on the podcast. Had a few miscarriages in between my first and second son, discovered that I had lower progesterone and still have lower progesterone now. And I feel like a lot of women, and I even see it with my coaching, I get them to do their labs now, just with these common symptoms coming up. Would you say that it's really common now to have lower progesterone? And like, what age does that typically start? And what are some of the symptoms? And let's double click on that.
Yes, I'm so glad you asked. Yeah, I think, I mean, my opinion is that this is like an epidemic for modern women, that we just don't have as much progesterone around. And you know, progesterone and estrogen are the two primary like female sex hormones that we talk about. And progesterone doesn't get the same attention that estrogen does in terms of like what its impact really is on the body. So you mentioned this, it's definitely related to carrying a pregnancy. So progesterone, progestation, it's really stimulating to the thyroid. So it's a big metabolism supportive hormone. And even more important than that, you know, progesterone balances the effects of estrogen. So when we think about like PMS or cycle symptoms, or even just like the bumpy road through perimenopause, most of that is attributed to estrogen that's rising and falling pretty significantly. And progesterone comes in and balances that. So this is like nature's soothing anti-anxiety hormone, like supporting good sleep and thyroid and just really helping us be more in flow with life. And I often think about, you know, if you can picture this, like a woman that's in your life that comes into this space and she's just like grounded in who she is, she's calm, she's confident, she's not reactive to things around her. Like that is the picture of progesterone. Mm-hmm. We just don't see much of that in today's culture of like burning the candle at both ends. I'll sleep when I'm dead. I'm going to hit three workouts in a day. I'm going to like have all of these businesses and do all of the things. And we just have such a mismatch between, I think, what our body needs in order to make hormones adequately and the way that most of us are living our lives with how much stress is just part of it. So all of that to say, I mean, we see low progesterone really across the age ranges. This can start right away. You know, back to my story of having really symptomatic cycles right out of the gates, and it sounds like you did too. It can take a good year of ovulating before your body really learns how to make progesterone. So that first year of periods can be pretty symptomatic because we don't have that balance. So we can see it right away. And then if we start something like birth control immediately, then we lose those years of progesterone production too. So we see it across the age range. It usually shows up like miserable symptomatic periods, so maybe painful, heavy, or crampy. It can show up like poor sleep, especially in the second half of our cycle.
Yeah.
It can show up like fertility issues or recurrent loss. It can show up like hypothyroidism. It can show up like endometriosis or anything that's associated with high amounts of estrogen. And I think it's important to note that we can restore this when we want to. I think there are some really tangible things we can do to work on it. But because part of the issue is so ingrained with how we live our lives and this baseline level of stress we operate with, it can be quite a bit of a like reinvention of self to get to a place mm-hmm. where we can really support progesterone.
And so is this something that you will help your clients with how to raise progesterone naturally? And what is your thoughts on like a bioidentical progesterone? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would consider this a big part of the work we do with clients, because whether someone's looking to get pregnant or just feel great, you know, supporting progesterone is part of that roadmap regardless. And for bioidentical progesterone, I think that has an absolute time and place and can be really helpful, especially if somebody is coming out of a really low progesterone season of life, and it can really help kind of kickstart things and help the body get used to progesterone being on board. We don't do a ton with bioidentical progesterone in our practice, just given our scope of practices as RDs, but a lot of our clients that have gone through fertility struggles or work with maybe an endocrinologist will often have that in the mix too. And we've seen that be really helpful.
What are some of like common, maybe debunking some common symptoms, mm-hmm. You know, what are common and then what are like not normal?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good question. And I feel like this started in our like middle school health classes where we learned about the menstrual cycle. I just remember being taught, this is going to be miserable. It's a nuisance.
Yeah.
This sucks. It's just part of being a woman.
Yeah.
And good news, you could turn it off with something like birth control if you really hate it. And I think that's so normalized in today's society that it's just like acceptable to have a lot of cramps, to require ibuprofen or Tylenol every month, to have to miss work or social events. Yeah. And it's not normal, even though it is common. Our periods are not supposed to be like that. They're supposed mm-hmm. to kind of come and go almost without us knowing. I mean, we're going to feel certain shifts because our hormones change so much, but we shouldn't be requiring pain medication or heating pads to get through it. And we shouldn't be missing out on life either. And if we are, that's just our body's way of communicating something needs some support and attention. It's not a flaw or a problem. It's just our body's primary way of communicating, and how lucky we are as women to get a monthly report card of how things are going in the body.
Yeah, I feel like that's so important. And we're not taught that at all. Like, I just thought it was normal to, you know, have a heating pad and,
me too.
And be like curled in a ball in pain with, you know, taking Advil. And,
yeah.
You know, you're 16, 17 at the time. Over those years, like, that's like you accumulate. It's, I mean, you're accumulating, you know, the Advil or whatever, or even the birth control pills. And when you're on birth control pills, you're not actually ovulating. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. And that's the primary way that that's preventing pregnancy. Because if we don't ovulate, there's no chance of conception.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you are ready to transform your body and mindset, but tired of endless cardio and restrictive diets, I want to personally invite you into the Team Strong Girls Body Transformation Group on Facebook. This is our supportive private community of like-minded women, and every Thursday at noon, I teach a live masterclass on weight loss, fat burning, and muscle building. I also dive deep into perimenopause and menopause, info that we all need to know. Many of our members describe this group as the one thing that they've been longing for when starting a fitness program. So please don't miss out. Click the link in the show notes and join our group today. Transformations don't happen in isolation.
But if you look at our cycle, like the ovulation part of our cycle is like the actual part where, like, you know, I've read studies where like women are, they're most beautiful. They're, mm-hmm. their skin's glowing, you know, they just feel as though they're thriving, you know, those couple days. And to take that away for years is going to have a detrimental effect later on.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, we forego that natural hormone production completely when it's being suppressed. So we miss out, like you said, the ovulation time of the cycle is supposed to be like prime time, feeling and looking our best and physically performing our best too. So for those with fitness goals or athletes, like that's a really great time of the month. But
you can lift heavier, you can push yourself a little bit more, right? Yep. Do you do cycle training? Do you recommend specific training along your cycle?
So we talk about it a bit with our clients. None of the RDs on the team, myself included, have like a specific personal training type background where we're prescribing something specific, but we do talk about the way the different phases of the cycle feel and the way that might manifest in terms of training decisions or training performance and can help guide there. I always like to tell our clients the first, like most important step is that we've got movement that feels good and is supporting lean muscle mass. And if that looks the same all month long, we're still doing great. But if you're already doing that and we want to look at taking this to the next level, then we can start to talk about training differences in the first and second half of your cycle. I would be curious to know if you guys do that too.
You know what? We don't specifically do cycle training. But when I work with my client, I'm asking them a lot of questions, and I'm asking them to ask themselves a lot of questions, you know, to become more in tune with their body. So, you know, for me, for instance, if I'm leading up to my period that like week before, I don't feel like I have as much energy. So I may pull back on lifting as much as maybe I would when I'm, you know, in that first part of my cycle or ovulation. I might pull back, you know, a set or some reps, right? But or I might just forego the workout depending on how I'm feeling and go for a walk instead, you know, get my body in more of that parasympathetic state. So it's a lot of, you know, asking and telling them to kind of check in with themselves and see how they're feeling, because I feel like most women in today's world, or like our type A personalities, you'll just push through, right? And you don't necessarily have to push through. It can make things a lot worse when you do that and not listen to your body.
Agreed. I'm so glad that those are the conversations you guys are having, because you do realize how infrequently women today check in with themselves. Mm-hmm. And again, even if you're not making big changes to your training, if you just develop the skill set to know where you are in your cycle, you can create so much more grace for yourself when, like you said, if you're not feeling it, maybe I'm going for a walk or maybe I'm scaling it back a little bit. And it's not abnormal. It's not laziness. We're supposed to feel different during different weeks of the cycle.
And the way that I set up somebody's program is they can change their workouts around in that week or over a 2 week period to fit how they're feeling. So it's not that in the grand scheme of things, it's not going to hinder any progress.
Right.
What do you think has contributed to the rampant hormone health struggles that we're hearing about and experiencing? Like I'm 41 and I'm experiencing it. So what do you think has contributed to that?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. I think, you know, the first one we touched on a little bit, and that is the mismatch between our biology and the way that we live our life. And what I mean by that is that female physiology is rooted in safety. And that means our body, our brain specifically, is looking at how we're living, moving, eating, breathing, and thinking and deciding, am I safe or am I not safe? And if I'm safe, that means that I have abundant energy where I could potentially support new life, because whether or not your goal is pregnancy, the menstrual cycle is very much designed around that fact.
Yeah, procreation.
Yeah. And if I'm not safe, then I'm going to conserve energy because I don't have abundant energy to support new life. And that means I can start to take away non-essential functions. And I would consider hormones not essential for life. We can live without them, but we're not going to thrive without them. Okay. So if we do anything, whether it's stress, food, or exercise that undercut the energy, now we start to see our hormone production slowing or dwindling down. And that doesn't feel great, which I'm sure we'll talk about that too. So I think that's part of it. You know, we're this type A, like overachieving female that's not getting enough rest, not getting enough nourishment, and maybe doing way too much intensity in terms of their training creates that situation where the body no longer feels safe. From a nutrition perspective, if you think back to the decades that we all grew up in, so I'm speaking to women that are in like their 30s, 40s, and 50s, we had some really bad nutrition advice for women.
No fat for a while.
Oh my gosh.
No fat.
Right. Hormones made from fat.
Margarine over butter. Remember that phase?
There were a lot of weird things. There was like Special K for a while had a diet that was just eating Special K cereal. Like things got weird. And I think we grew up with just some pretty disordered relationships to food and body. And similar to what you mentioned with workouts and pushing through, we got really good at either ignoring or suppressing hunger cues too, because we were following rules that were outside of how we actually felt. So again, lack of safety through lack of nourishment. And then the last piece that I'm sure you could tell pretty passionate about is just the like widespread use of birth control from really early ages. That definitely has contributed to the rampant hormone issues that I see today, because we weren't really educated on what that meant, what it did, or how to appropriately recover from that.
Do you think fasting, like this whole fasting thing, has contributed to hormone issues?
Yeah, it probably has.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
what is your thoughts on that? Like, yeah, let's get into that. Because okay. That's one of the, a big topic for when women come and start with us. It's like they've been fasting for like 16, 18 hours. And
yeah, I know. I think, again, if we go back to the research on fasting, I don't know that any of it was done on women, maybe very recently. Our physiology is very different than male physiology in that sense. And I don't want to knock fasting, because I definitely think there's some therapeutic benefits to this and longevity benefits that are really exciting.
Yeah.
Where I think women get into trouble is when they apply fasting as a long-term strategy for themselves. Mm. And they're doing it day in and day out for months or maybe years. That's where we start to see the wheels fall off. It's like the bell curve of benefit, you know, once we do this for too long, we're now on the downslope and it's actually more harmful than beneficial. So for women, you know, the first thing with fasting is that we've got to be in a great hormone and metabolic spot to do well with it. And most of our clients are not in that state when they're first coming to us. So it's just not appropriate. And then the second piece would be, how is it being applied? Can we do it in a way where we get the longevity benefits of fasting without it being too taxing to our system? And my opinion on that is that it doesn't look like a daily practice. It looks like something we might employ a couple times a year.
Okay. Okay. What about like syncing it with your cycle?
Yeah. So I think that there's some possibility that that could be a good direction too. What we've noticed in clients is that fasting is better tolerated actually in the luteal phase than the follicular. So between ovulation and the start of your period, because progesterone's action actually makes us better at burning fat. Mm-hmm. So we're getting into ketosis typically if we're fasting and burning fat for fuel. And then if we've done it after we've already ovulated, the stress that comes from fasting isn't likely to mess with ovulation because it's already happened.
Okay.
So that might be something.
So you do the fasting after ovulation, and what would that look like? Like, what would a typical fast look like for a woman? Like, what would you suggest the hours of the eating window and versus the fasting?
It depends on the goal. So again, in our practice, it's never something that we're prescribing based on what they're coming in for. But if, again, someone's metabolically and hormonally healthy and they're like, hey, I've read about the benefits of fasting, we might do something like a 24 or 48 hour actual like water fast to get into that autophagy where we're cleaning out some old cells and helping with that longevity aspect. I think the fasting mimicking diet that Walter Longo created made that autophagy state a little bit more accessible, because he essentially figured out like the minimum amount of food that you could eat and still stay in that place. So there is still some nourishment for those, but it's a 5-day thing. And then if somebody was looking at fasting from a supporting blood sugar stability or restoring insulin sensitivity, maybe we would just look at closing that eating window a little bit.
Okay.
So maybe it's just 12 hours. Maybe we've got a 16-hour fast. Again, it depends on their stress and ability to recover from it. But I do think having about a 12-hour fasting window from like the last thing that we eat at night to the first thing we eat in the morning can be great for blood sugar and also just the health of the GI tract, you know, letting it rest.
Yeah, I think that everybody should do the 12-hour thing.
Yeah,
you know?
That's, like, I wouldn't even consider that a fast.
Yeah, that's not even a fast. But I mean, so if you think about it, a lot of people will be eating right up until they go to bed, and then and you know, when you eat before bed, it can affect your sleep, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on what you're eating. And then you wake up at 6 and then you're eating again. So it's not necessarily, you're only giving your body maybe like a 6-hour break. So I think that 12 hours is like a really good, and that's enough time to get all your nourishment in as well, right? 12-hour eating window.
Totally. Yeah. And I even think there's something to that from like a circadian rhythm perspective too. Like when the sun is up, we're actually better able to digest food and keep blood sugar stable. And when the sun is down, we're not the 24-hour diner. We don't have the same
capacity. We should be sleeping. Okay. So what are some practical ways to start building happy hormones? Like how can somebody start now after listening to this podcast?
Yeah, I'd say step one is we've got to be eating enough to support hormone production.
Okay.
And that means...
Is there a number that you can throw out or is it...
It's so different from person to person. But I will say it's definitely higher than the 1200 calorie like tabloid things that we all saw at the grocery store and still see. Yeah. Like your average adult woman that has some activity in her day, we're probably in the ballpark of like 2000 calories as a baseline, you know, supporting hormones. And how you're coming into this really matters. So if you're coming in it from years or decades of really not eating much, we're not going to jump to that point.
That will be a lot of food at first, right?
Yes. So it's a slow, steady thing. But if you are wondering how to support hormones, the first would be, let's check in on nourishment. Is this adequate? And some ways that we would know it was adequate is that we were largely free of hormone symptoms. So if you're still cycling, meaning they're coming and going without a lot of drama, if you track your cycles and maybe track your basal body temperatures, you're noticing that those look great, especially in the luteal phase. We're sleeping through the night, so we're not waking up in the middle of the night. We're waking up with appetite in the morning. We're ready to eat. And then we're noticing progress through our training. So we're lifting weights, we're progressing those weights, we're seeing changes to the body composition that we would expect, and we're actually enjoying doing that. When we're undernourished, we often don't see results that you would expect from training, typically dread training, and then we're just spinning our wheels for a while because it takes food to build muscle. Yeah. So I'd start with the food piece. From there, I think looking at things like mineral status and some micronutrients can be important too. And a lot of this you can do without testing, you know, just starting to bring some mineral rich, unrefined salt back into your diet. That's also on our list of kind of crappy nutrition advice we grew up with, was just being so afraid of salt.
So like sea salt, Himalayan salt, stuff, and switching it up, right?
Exactly. So we want a salt that was unrefined, meaning they didn't strip all the other trace minerals away and leave just sodium, which is our typical table salt. So like you said, sea salts are great. They're just evaporated. So everything that was present is still there. Himalayan salts, Redmond's Real Salt is great. There's a bunch of really good companies out there now. And the key is just that it has not been meddled with, unrefined. Right. What you're just bringing that in when you're cooking. You know, I'm not saying you have to like chug tons of salt water, but just... bringing it into your cooking.
Be liberal with your salt.
Yeah.
It makes your food taste better.
Yes.
Guys, I'm going to take a little break from the podcast and talk about something that's really important to me, and that is energy. Now, we could all use a little bit more energy. Am I right? Now, I've got a cool little hack for you, and it's one scoop of Burn Cycle to replace your coffee. You know I'm not a huge fan of so-called weight loss products, but I'm in favor of delicious and easy ways to boost energy. Burn Cycle tastes amazing. My favorites are watermelon candy and blue raspberry. They both taste like summer to me. And it gives you an incredible focus and energy throughout your day. Way better than a regular cup of coffee. Burn Cycle is made by Perfect Sports, and they make a bunch of other products that are easily the top of the line in performance, quality, and results. Like the incredible Diesel New Zealand Grass-Fed Whey Isolate, the new Diesel Vegan, and the ALTRD State Pre-Workout, and many more. I've known about Perfect Sports for years now, and I've been working with them for months now. So if you want to get any of their amazing top-of-the-line supplements, click the link in the show notes below and save 20% off your order.
What is your thoughts on, like, a lot of women will wake up and the first thing that they have is their coffee?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. So I would say coffee is not breakfast.
Okay.
We want to have breakfast and then have our coffee.
Okay.
And the reason is, you know, we've been fasting probably about 12 hours and we are waking up in the morning, and we want to rely on food and glucose to bring our blood sugar up, not stress hormones. Okay. So if we prolong that fast, and especially if we add caffeine into that prolonged fast, we've now kicked on cortisol, so our stress hormone. to keep blood sugar up. It's kind of our backup mechanism. And it might feel good, especially if you're tending toward lower cortisol. I definitely went through a season of this in grad school where I was just drinking tons of coffee as breakfast. And it like made me feel alive because I was.
Yeah, me too. I went through a phase like that where like I loved it. I couldn't wait to wake up in the morning.
Yep. I know. I think we all went there. Yeah. And the problem with that is that that's false energy. So it's, and we're relying on stress hormones, which do a couple of problematic things for us. They break down lean muscle mass and they contribute to midsection fat gain. So if you've noticed that some body composition shifts are moving in the opposite direction of what you would expect based on the effort you're applying, and you're having coffee for breakfast, this is one little change we can make. So we like to recommend having a solid, meaning like carbs, proteins, and fats together breakfast within an hour of waking, and then withholding your caffeine to either with that meal or shortly thereafter.
Okay. Okay. Great advice. Yeah. I really try hard to have my breakfast now, but then sometimes I'm getting the kids off to school and I'll slip in, but I do feel a difference. I feel, I feel the crash after. Yeah. I don't feel as energized in the day. I have to admit that. Like if I just, you know, remember to switch it around and have my breakfast first, I feel so much better.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts around, like protein requirements for women? Mm. Do you suggest like building your meals around protein and hitting a certain protein amount per day? Yeah. And what does that look like?
Definitely. I think women really undereat protein. And I think the recommendations for protein intake for women are too low. We like to see women have like a baseline target of about 100 grams a day. And then the more active they are, the more lifting they're doing, that would actually be higher than that. So like you talked about, the way that our breakfast goes really dictates the way that we feel the rest of the day. So we want to make sure we're getting like around 30 grams of protein at breakfast alone. And that'll help set you up for good blood sugar stability the rest of the day and support those stress hormones from getting out of hand. So, you know, 20 to 30 grams at each meal, and then having a good protein rich snack would be a goal of ours. So we definitely focus on the protein component of the meal first, because it doesn't tend to be the like natural thing women gravitate toward. It's a lot easier for us to get carbs and fats than protein typically. Yeah. So we got to bring some awareness to that, because if we're not focused on it, we're probably not getting enough of it, just from what I see.
Do you get into different types of supplementation ever? Like, you know, we're hearing a lot about creatine now. I've been using creatine for the last couple of years. Do you see any benefits to that, or have you, you know, does your clients use it or do you suggest it?
So it's not a super common one in our practice, just because again, we're not getting into the fitness component, but having that sports nutrition background, I mean, creatine is one of the most well-researched supplements that there is related to like muscle mass. And I think it's, I mean, I'm not even aware of any downsides to using it, and I've just seen it be beneficial. We certainly do get into supplementation in practice too. Our focus tends to be more on like the nutrition repletion side of things based on what we're testing. But I do think that creatine makes sense from like a preserving lean muscle mass standpoint.
What do you, I know that you, and I love that you get your clients tested, because I feel like that's important, you know, to know exactly what you should be taking specifically for yourself and your needs. Would you say there's like, maybe like your top three supplements that everybody should be taking and what that would be?
Yeah. I'm always hesitant to like blanket recommend something without seeing somebody's lab, but I will say most people need magnesium. Most women need magnesium. That's also one of our tools for supporting that progesterone production and helping to calm the stress response down. And that can be delivered a number of different ways. We can do it topically, like lotions, sprays, or even like an Epsom salt.
For magnesium?
Which is nice. It can be part of like a evening wind down routine, you know? Or of course it can be an oral supplement as well, capsule or like a drink powder. So that's a really common one that we'll use. We love using desiccated beef liver capsules actually as a way to help get some organ meats in that are typically not super palatable for modern humans. And specifically with liver, we're looking at that being a really strong source of retinol or vitamin A.
Okay.
And based on the testing we do with our client population, there's typically some work to do on the vitamin A front. It's a rich source of vitamins too. So,
yeah, and it is hard to get the organ meat.
Yeah.
Would that also be a rich source of iron?
Yep. So copper, iron, vitamin A, and B vitamins. Zinc's in the mix too. And the nice thing about that, you know, because it's coming from an actual food, is the ratios between those nutrients are optimal. Whereas if we do like a traditional supplement versus something that's food-based, it's typically isolated to one of those nutrients. And I'm sure you've seen this in the testing that you guys too do too, you know, nothing happens in isolation. And if we really over-focus on one nutrient, we usually throw other things off. So we love food-based options whenever possible, because nature understands that relationship and typically gets it right.
What are your thoughts on like probiotics?
Oh yeah. I think that they can be great. We don't have one that we automatically just give to everybody. If someone's coming to us with digestive issues, we actually will take a look at the gut microbiome itself and do a stool test. And that can help us determine which strains or dose might make sense. But I think, again, if we look at the typical human diet right now, there's not a ton of fermented or probiotic rich foods unless we're intentional about that. So paired with all the antibiotic use that's pretty common, it can be nice to do some reseeding of the gut
testing. Okay, so you've mentioned a couple tests. So with your clients coming in, I'm assuming you do like all the labs, right? And then also stool samples too. What other tests do you typically
So the two that we automatically do, we do a big round of blood work looking at things like the thyroid and nutrient status and some of our basic labs like iron and CBC and that kind of stuff, blood sugar regulation. And we do a HTMA or a hair tissue mineral analysis on all of our clients to look at mineral status. And again, looking at like the high stress modern woman that's typically quite depleted from stress. And then from there, depending on what they're coming to us for, we might look at a stool test. So we use GIMAP for that if they've got a lot of GI symptoms, or we might use something called a Dutch test to look at their sex hormones. And that's a pretty powerful tool too. We look at, you know, all the sex hormones and then how they're being metabolized, which is fun.
And how do you work with your clients? Do they come in or can you work with them virtually?
Yeah, it's all virtual, which is really nice. And it was prior to the pandemic, so nothing had to change.
That's same with our business.
Amazing. A blessing for sure. Yeah,
totally,
so we do everything
total blessing, yeah.
virtual, which is great. And I was living in California at the time and had an office, and then nobody wanted to sit in traffic in California. So we were doing telehealth, and then I was like, why do I have an office? Like, I can do this remote. So it's been ever since.
What advice do you have for someone that feels stuck with their hormones and their healing journey?
Yeah. First, I just want to validate that, because it is a frustrating place to be. And we can even be in that place with the best of intentions and applying a lot of effort. And I would say first, like, allow yourself to feel that frustration. You're human. It's okay. And then I would say, let's go back to the drawing board and make sure nothing has been missed from like the obvious perspective. And again, back on the eating enough piece, we just see this so often with clients that have spent years working on their hormones and they're still stuck. Are we actually truly eating enough to nourish ourselves and produce hormones? If we're not, we're just not going to progress past that point. And then I would look at, you know, the stressors in your life and what is potentially within our control to reduce. So it's not common that we can like quit a job or take a sabbatical or leave a family, but we could work on our sleep. We could work on actually getting some sun exposure. We could use any downtime we have to do something that's actually restorative, like reading a fun book or talking to a friend or walking, rather than getting sucked into scrolling, because it just does not actually help.
Makes it worse.
Then, yeah, it does make it worse.
Yeah.
So tempting. So tempting, but it makes it worse. And then from there, I'd say if you're checking those boxes and you're like, I'm doing those things and still stuck, that's where it can be really helpful to do some testing, to look under the hood and see what other pieces might need some support. The basics go really, really far with hormones, but every now and then there's something else at play that we really can't see without taking a look under the hood.
Those are great, great suggestions. Wanted to double click on the nutrition piece again. Do you get your clients to like track what they're eating, or at least know like the calorie range and doing some measurement? Like I get my clients to measure their food at first. I mean, just to do that work first so they can, and so many are like, you know, I don't want to really measure my food. But then as soon as they start measuring, they're like, I'm actually like, I was way under eating protein because they're actually seeing how much protein they should be having for each meal. How do you get your clients to track that?
Yeah, we do it in the beginning too, because we need to know exactly what current nutrition looks like in order to intervene effectively.
Yeah.
It's a pain, and we're not a big fan of having someone track things long-term because, I mean, I wouldn't do it long-term either, so I'm not going to ask the client to. But I think it's a necessary skill set and awareness tool initially to track what we're eating, be able to get some data on that, and actually learn like what is coming from the food that we're eating in terms of protein, carbs, and fats, because that's a skill set that always stays in your brain, and we're able to visually identify stuff on the plate going forward. So typically we will have them do some tracking prior even to their first session. We'll dig into that data. And then as we're making suggestions to change that, they might have to do some tracking until we get to a place where that feels really good and more intuitive. But it is a goal with our clients to move to like a non-tracking style, like going off of their own hunger and fullness cues by the time we wrap up.
And how long do you typically work with somebody for?
So our programs are 4 months long. We do have the option to extend that on the back end if we need the time, but 4 months has really been a sweet spot for us because in the world of hormones, it takes about 90 days or 3 months to see a change in cycle symptoms from the point of intervention. So we need that other month on the back end to make sure things are wrapped up nicely.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, this has been such a pleasure chatting with you, Kaylee. Ooh, I feel like likewise. We could continue this. I'll for sure have you back on. Maybe we can talk something more specific, which would be awesome. I'll get some feedback from my audience and I'll reach out. But where can people find you and connect with you? And I'll include these links in the show notes as well.
Cool. Yeah, so you can find me mostly on Instagram, and it's at KayleeRD. My name is spelled really weird. It's K-A-E-L-Y-R-D. My website is the same as that too. And in both places, you'll find a lot of free educational resources, and then you'll see different ways my team and I can help support you in different capacities. And if you listen to this, I'd love if you stopped by and said hello in the Instagram DMs. But thank you so much for having me on, and I would love to come back in the future.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Kaylee.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap on another episode. Guys, thank you so much for spending this time with me. I just love being able to share these strong stories and thoughts with you. And I hope you were able to take away a piece of inspiration from today. If there's one favor I could ask, please keep sharing, post a screenshot, share a direct link with a friend, or post a review and help spread the word so more people can tune in and find their strong. And if you ever wanted to subscribe to our Strong Fitness magazine and get the physical copy mailed to your doorstep for more inspiration and motivation, I will include the link in the show notes, and please feel free to use my STRONGGIRL3 discount code to save. Guys, I cannot wait for the next show. I'm Jennifer Van Barneveld-Pay. Take care and stay strong.